This is your AEW Full Gear 2020 review. I am the Solemn Monster, a late Saturday night, almost midnight here, almost Sunday morning. Thank you for choosing me for your Full Gear coverage here tonight. You know, this was on paper the biggest card I think that AEW has ever put together. You really look at the matches, top to bottom, this is a very impressive card on paper. And the only question was, were they going to be able to deliver? I thought it was one of the best AEW shows of the entire year. That doesn't just go for the pandemic shows. That goes for any show they've done all year in 2020. I think they needed a nice rebound coming off that All Out show, which I really, you know, it wasn't a bad show, but it definitely was not among the best AEW shows back in September. And this was a huge bounce back for them tonight. Just an excellent night of wrestling. You know, the I Quit match was pretty much as brutal as you would have expected that match to be given the stipulation. Hangman and Omega, they had an excellent match to close out the Eliminator tournament that's been taking place over the last several weeks. The TNT title match, AEW tag team title matches, I thought they both delivered. If you like the Broken Universe stuff with Matt Hardy, then you probably very much enjoyed the Elite Deletion match tonight. If you are tired of it, if you are not a fan of it, you probably didn't like it. I didn't mind it, although I think after tonight, I kind of have cinematic fatigue. Let that be the last one we see for a while. But I thought it was a good closing chapter, though, to the whole rivalry between those two. Matt Hardy and Sammy Guevara, they've been feuding now for a number of months. Jericho and MJF, so much to get into. So much to get into tonight, but this was a thumbs way up show. And we'll check your opinions later on. You can vote on Twitter at Solemonster. They had about 1,000 fans in the building tonight. That is the biggest audience that they have had since the start of the pandemic shows back in the middle of March. They've hovered mostly around 500, maybe a little over 500 now. They've been taking baby steps at Daly's Place as far as allowing more people into the building. And you could hear it. And that was really one of the biggest differences, I think, between this show and the show that we got on Labor Day weekend. Combination of two things. Number one, more people in the building tonight. Number two, if you remember, they did complain a lot about the humidity in Florida for that show. It was still a summer show. Heard a lot of complaints from people who were there, some of the wrestlers about the humidity that night. So did that have an effect on the crowd? Probably. You didn't have that issue tonight. And it is amazing how a vocal audience, even of just 1,000 people, can make a huge difference. And this was a lively bunch tonight. This is an energy that's been missing. So it was nice to have that back tonight. The buy-in match featured the AEW debut of Allison Kay, the former Sienna from Impact Wrestling, former NWA Women's Champion. She had just announced only a number of days ago that she was a free agent. So either she was let out of her contract or her contract with the NWA had expired. 24 hours later, Tony Khan made the announcement that Allison Kay was going to be challenging Serena Deeb on the kickoff show for the NWA Women's Championship, which is kind of strange. I mean, if you think about it, here's a woman who just left the NWA, announced herself as a free agent, no longer with the National Wrestling Alliance, and she comes into AEW to do what? The challenge for the NWA Women's Championship. I don't know. 2020 is wild. For a lot of reasons, 2020 has been a very wild year. Her challenger, as I mentioned, was Serena Deeb. I thought they had a good match. I enjoyed this match. This was a good match. A lot of holds early on. I won't bore you with all the holds, but there was a lot of, I thought, good wrestling here in this match. And Allison Kay had hit an Alabama slam for a near fall, hit her AK-47 finisher. Serena rolled to the outside, though, before Kay could cover her. And when they got back inside, Serena hit her with a dragon screw, modified Styles Clash for a near fall, put the Serenity Lock submission on, and that was it. Allison Kay tapped out. I didn't expect her to win. Was this a tryout? It kind of felt like one. This could have been a tryout for her. If she's a free agent, then she's contractually not tied to any company, I think she'd be a good pickup. She could be a good pickup for the women's division in AEW. But more importantly is what happened when the match was over. because they played theme music and out came Thunder Rosa. So Thunder Rosa is in fact going to be making more appearances on TV. That is a good thing. That is a great thing. And she confronted Serena Deeb. So obviously they're going to have a rematch at some point soon. And I got to tell you, I am way more interested in the NWA women's title than I am the AEW women's title, which is problematic given that these are AEW shows. But I mean, I guess it's a good problem to have if AEW, they're the ones broadcasting the matches. But that's something that they need to work on. I made that comment last week. I said, I've been enjoying the NWA women's stuff more than AEW, and these are AEW shows. So maybe it'll motivate them. Maybe it'll motivate them to up their game with the AEW women's title. But they weren't messing around tonight, so the main card opened with the finals of the Eliminator Tournament to crown a new number one contender for the AEW World Championship, Kenny Omega, one-on-one against Hangman Page. I thought these two killed it. This was the match I was most looking forward to on the show tonight. Jim Ross introduced Don Callis as a special guest commentator alongside himself, Tony Schiavone and Excalibur. Introduced him as the Impact Wrestling EVP. And he said that he was invited there by his good friend Chris Jericho. And in fact, they are very good friends. I believe Don Callis is the man responsible for getting Chris Jericho to come to New Japan a couple of years ago to do that Wrestle Kingdom match against Kenny Omega. Now, think about what that snowballed into. Jericho has done a whole bunch of matches since then in New Japan. And you can thank Don Callis. Don Callis is the one, I think, who put the two of them together and said, hey, if you guys are interested, let's make this match happen. And that was a big deal. So he was there at ringside. Well, not ringside, but he was at the announce desk doing commentary. Very interesting. All right, the Impact Wrestling EVP is on AEW television, on AEW pay-per-view. You know, even if just for one match, and maybe he was legitimately just invited as a friend, but, you know, it's very interesting. They have one working relationship right now at the moment with Billy Corgan in the NWA. Could there be a second, right? How cool would that be to see AEW forging multiple business relationships, talent exchanges, working agreements with all of the major national promotions, you know? I say major, I know NWA is not that big, but NWA, Impact, Ring of Honor, and yes, New Japan at some point. If they can get a whole bunch of different working relationships going with all the different companies, like a little, their own little territory system here, I think that could be very cool. Kind of rotate talent in and out, special appearances on Dynamite. There may be TV contracts in some cases that might prevent that from happening, but I think that would be pretty cool. I thought Callis added a lot to the match, too. He gelled very well with Excalibur and Tony Schiavone and Jim Ross. I thought Jim Ross, for the most part, was on his game tonight. JR has good nights, and JR has bad nights. JR is not in the prime of his career anymore. JR is the greatest of all time at what he does, but he's not the Jim Ross of old, so you never really know what you're going to get with him. I thought, on the whole, he was on his game tonight. I thought the announcing and the commentary actually was very strong here on the show tonight. But Omega was taking a beating outside. He was sent flying into the barricade a whole bunch of different times. And there was one cool spot where he was thrown towards the barricade, and Omega jumped up. And, you know, they have those thin metal barricades. And he jumped up, was able to balance himself, and hit a moonsault. And that could have gone very badly. But he hit the move, so that was good. Omega hit the You Can't Escape. Looked like before he could follow through on the move. That was it. Ken Anderson used that same move, the Lambeau Plunge or whatever. But before he could jump to the ropes, it looked like he tweaked his knee. It was part of the story they were trying to tell. He wasn't really selling a knee injury for too much of the match, but they were teasing he might have tweaked his knee. Springboard dropkick gave Omega a near fall. Page fought out of the One-Winged Angel. Got destroyed with a V-trigger. slingshot dive. Page had him in position for the Deadeye on the ramp, but Omega fought out of it. He ended up being powerbombed on the ramp. Back of his head just smacked the ramp. And so he rolled into the ring. They had a forearm exchange back and forth. Page hit a rolling elbow. Tiger Driver 98, though, for the near fall. And then they got very crazy here. This is where the match intensity really picked up to that next level, where they were trading blows back and forth. Page, he avoided a V-trigger. Omega jumped out of a German suplex, hit a Snapdragon. Page then popped up. He fired up and hit the Deadeye for a very close near fall. So Omega avoided the Buckshot Lariat. Cradled Page with an Okada Cradle for a very, very close near fall. Hit a Dragon Screw V-trigger through the ropes, avoided another Buckshot, and he hit two more V-triggers, set up the One-Winged Angel, and Page was fighting. He was fighting. He was trying to fight his way out of it, and then finally, he hit the One-Winged Angel. He could fight no more, and Kenny Omega picks up the three count. He gets the win. Kenny Omega wins the Eliminator. He becomes the new number one contender for the AEW World Championship. That is how you open a damn pay-per-view. That was probably the best AEW opener they've ever had to a pay-per-view or to any show. This match was excellent. Excellent. I was surprised, though. No cheating. No teases of any cheating or shortcuts by Omega. This was a clean win. Just a hard-fought, clean win straight up for Kenny Omega. And it was the right outcome. This is the Kenny Omega that I've been waiting to see. I think that it really bolsters that singles division. Yeah, I mean, that's when he came in. All the buzz around Kenny Omega was not around him as a tag team wrestler. It was around him as a, top three attraction in the company. And now we're finally getting to see that Kenny Omega, and it sets up the rematch, Omega against Jon Moxley, or does it? I have not gotten that far in my review yet. I don't want to spoil the main event. Although people had it in their heads what the outcome was going to be, that was probably the most predictable match on the show, but I don't know. I won't spoil it yet. I haven't gotten there yet. And as far as Hangman is concerned, I mean, this is not a match where, I don't want to see people going, oh, Hangman now, what happens with Hangman? He's buried and this and that. I mean, that's a joke. You'd have to be a fool to think that. Again, this is moving along exactly the way that I thought it would. And I'll get into it more after the main event. Hangman is going to be fine. This is part of a longer story arc. If they know what they're doing, this is part of a longer story arc that should be paying off later next year. Orange Cassidy, one-on-one against John Silver of the Dark Order. This got moved on to the main card. Originally, this was going to be on the buy-in. This was going to be the buy-in match. And it should have been. There was no real story about this match. I mean, maybe there was stuff playing out on Being the Elite. But on Dynamite, this was a very hollow build. I mean, it was really just a match thrown together to get two guys on the show. So I said, well, it's exactly the kind of match that belongs on the buy-in. And I expected a comedy buffer is really what I expected this to be. What this turned into was a very good professional wrestling match. And it really, in a lot of ways, I think, was a breakout performance for John Silver. John Silver is one of many members of the Dark Order. Has not had a lot of feature singles matches. Dark does not count. I'm talking on Dynamite, pay-per-view. In fact, this was probably his first singles match on an AEW pay-per-view. And I thought he had a great showing. He ripped the pockets out of Orange Cassidy's pants at the very beginning of the match. Literally reached into his pockets and pulled them out. And started chewing on them. He took the man's pockets and he put them in his mouth. Which seems very unsanitary. Silver was tossing Orange Cassidy around from one end of the ring to the other. And I know Orange Cassidy is not a big guy. But John Silver's a small guy. He is. He's a small dude. But he's throwing this guy around, so he's very strong. He's small, but he's very strong. Cassidy did connect with a Tilt-A-Whirl DDT. Could not put the match away. There was a single-handed gorilla press by Silver. So one-handed, he pressed Orange Cassidy over his head, dropped him over the top rope, or across the top rope. Cassidy with the Michinoku driver for the near fall. Beach break, he went for the beach break. Nope. Went for the orange punch. Nope. Stun Dog Millionaire connects. Another orange punch attempt. Silver connects with a pump kick and the Spin Doctor for the near fall. And John Silver was paying homage at the very end of this match to Mr. Brody Lee. And he went for the Discus Lariat, missed, and Cassidy hit the orange punch and the beach break for the win. Better than I expected it to be. Like I said, I thought this was going to be 3, 4, maybe 5 minutes of comedy filler. John Silver is a very entertaining guy, but he showed some power and he showed, you know, that he can be serious as well in this match. I thought he impressed. Darby Allin, one-on-one against the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes. First time we've heard. Well, actually, not. That's not true. They were saying this was the first time he was being referred to as Cody Rhodes on this show. They've accidentally referred to him as Cody Rhodes before. This was for the TNT Championship last week. So the story behind the Rhodes situation. Last week, Cody abandoned a couple of trademark applications that he had put in for. He and WWE were kind of at odds about Slamboree and the Match Beyond. He was trying to trademark those names. And he dropped the petition. He dropped the attempts to trademark those names. Obviously, some kind of agreement was reached between he and WWE, because WWE, who I think may have been contesting the Rhodes name, no longer putting up a fight. And Cody got the Rhodes name back, so I guess all is well, and now they're calling him Cody Rhodes again. They brought back Mike Chioda to officiate the match, so I guess they're bringing him in for big matches. We haven't seen Earl Hebner. Remember at the beginning of AEW, they brought in Earl Hebner as their senior special referee. Haven't seen him since. Then again, Earl is, you know, I mean, his name is fucking Earl. So, I mean, he sounds old. He is old. Maybe he just can't do it anymore. He's an old man. Mike Chioda is not a young man, but Mike Chioda can still get, he can get up and down. So it was good to see. He even got a Mike Chioda chant from the people in the building. A Mike Chioda chant. Might have been for the first time in the man's career. Darby was frustrating Cody early in the match. So Arn Anderson on the outside, he pulls Cody aside. He says to him, he goes, start muscling him around. No more bullshit. Start muscling this guy around. There was a diving shoulder block by Darby out of the ring. So Cody is outside. He's got his back turned. This maniac comes flying through the middle and the bottom rope at warp speed with his shoulder right into the back of Cody's head. I thought he concussed him just on that shoulder, right to the back of the head. Knocked him loopy. But Cody had Darby up in position for an atomic drop. He had I think it was Darby's left arm behind him in a hammerlock position. And he just chucked him over the top rope and onto the ramp. And Darby landed on the arm, and he sold the arm. He sold the arm and the shoulder for the rest of the match. Cody honed in on that. He was working over the arm. Darby dodged a Cody moonsault, went for the coffin drop. Cody caught him, though, on the way down. And Darby, he yanked off the middle turnbuckle pad, and Cody went charging into the corner. He hit the turnbuckle, got rolled up for a near fall. The coolest part of this match, Cody hit an avalanche crossroads, and that was very cool. I mean, he got the twisting motion in midair. They had this overhead camera angle of it, this replay. It looked great and should have finished the match if not for the fact that Darby was too close to the ropes when Cody went for the pin. Darby wasn't even moving. His hand just so happened to be underneath the bottom rope. Mike Chioda saw that. He said, nope, hands underneath the rope. So Darby jumps onto Cody's back, trying to put him out with a sleeper. Cody starts climbing the rope. I thought he was going to do a moonsault with Darby on his back, which would have been ridiculous. But instead, he climbs the ropes. He falls backwards to break the hold. And Darby rolls outside the ring, just made it back in before the count of 10. Cody keeps yelling at Darby, says, stay down. stay down. Darby will not stay down. Cody grabbed his weight belt. Darby ended up tripping him with it, gave him a jackknife cradle for a near fall. He turned the disaster kick into the Last Supper. Great near fall. Couldn't quite put it away. And he hit the coffin drop, but Cody got his shoulder up at the last second. I don't know if that makes him the first person to kick out of the coffin drop. It might. Unless he hit Moxley with it, maybe at one point, and Moxley maybe kicked out. But you don't see too many people kicking out of the coffin drop. Cody kicked out. Darby couldn't believe it. Cody went for the crossroads. Allen turned it into a cradle. And then they exchanged a series of cradles back and forth, until finally Darby got a cradle and he pinned him. He shocked Cody. And the place exploded, and Darby Allin wins his very first championship in AEW. And in four matches with Cody, he wins his very first match. I've been talking about this story for months and how I was hoping Darby would be the one to take this title. I mean, if you listen to my Dynamite reviews and watch my Dynamite reviews every week, I've been talking about this for months, about who I wanted to see be the man to take that title away from Cody. And I said it should be Darby Allin. They had one draw, and then Cody, I think, had two or maybe three, I think two, wins over him. Yeah, well, two wins, the draw, and this was match four. And it just made total sense, you know, for Darby to finally pick up that W and let him be the one, because that TNT title was made for someone like Darby Allin. You know, if Darby Allin's not going to be the world champion right now, a guy like him or a guy like Sammy or MJF, I mean, these are the people that are tailor-made, you know, for that TNT title. And you needed that title on someone like Cody to give it some credibility. I mean, the belt's only been in existence for, what, 6 months maybe? Maybe not even? So let him run with it, which is why I enjoyed the open challenge gimmick. Let him give it some credibility, and then when the time comes, Darby Allin takes the title from Cody. I thought Cody might go heel. Maybe he still might, but it didn't happen here. Cody was in shock. He was disappointed, but he knelt down, and he handed the championship to Darby. And Darby was very emotional, and Darby was, you know, practically in tears. Taz comes out to interrupt, tells both guys to get lost. As he's talking and insulting them, from behind comes Brian Cage and Ricky Starks, and they attack them from behind. First, though, Starks posted Arn Anderson. And so the doctor was checking on Arn. Arn was taken out. And we had Cage and Ricky Starks, right, who were aligned, playing tug-of-war with the TNT title until Taz intervened and said, hey, focus on these guys. So Cage picked up Darby, and he carried him over to one of the Full Gear set pieces. Remember the spotlight many years ago, one of the WWE pay-per-views, that Big Show? He threw John Cena into the spotlight, and it exploded. I thought at first this was a spotlight. It wasn't. It was just a set piece, but it kind of looked that way. So, you know, there was no glass or anything. It was very safe, but Cage just sort of dumped him, you know, into the set piece. And then he brought him over to the car. Now, when Darby made his entrance, there was somebody driving a car into the building. Darby was, might have been a pickup truck. Darby was standing, you know, on the car. The car was still parked there. So Cage brings him back over to the car. He lays him across the hood of the car, opens the car door. They're going to slam the car door on Darby's arm. They're going to try to break this guy's arm. And before they can do it, in comes big Will Hobbs. He's got a chair in his hand. Right, Taz has been waiting on an answer from Will Hobbs. Are you going to join us or not? And Will Hobbs makes the save. He chases them away with the chair. And Darby, the last image of Darby, he is left for dead on top of the car. And as far as what direction they're going to go in now, I would not mind seeing a rematch with Darby Allin or Ricky Starks for the TNT title. They could do the tag team thing with Cody and Darby teaming up for one match against Cage and Ricky Starks. And look, if Cody is going to turn, you know, right now he's being a very gracious loser, but he could still turn. He's been showing very heelish tendencies in his matches. He's being very arrogant in a lot of his matches. He'll do push-ups in the middle of his matches. Little hints have been dropped here and there. it could still happen. If it does, it could happen in a tag team match. So, you know, think of Flair turning on Sting many years ago, that kind of thing. They have a lot of different directions they can go in here. Because remember, Cody can't challenge for the world title. Kenny Omega's got the next shot locked up anyway. So unless Cody is going to just continue to challenge for the TNT title, you know, what else is Cody going to do right now? There's no obvious program for Cody. You know, he's probably going to still be part of this for a while, which is why I think don't give up on the idea that there could be a heel turn in the works here. It's very possible. Jacob Donnelly, thank you for the $5, Jacob. I really appreciate that. Best AEW pay-per-view of the year, he says. Hands down, as much as I love the Bucks match, Darby winning the TNT title was his highlight of the night. Well, there you go. I thought the Darby and Cody match was very good. I would think that, for me, it was either the opener or the tag match, and I'm partial to the opener. I just really enjoyed the opening match, but that's me. Dry chicken without flavor with the $5. Look at this, peanut butter Vader time. Peanut butter Vader time, one of my favorite super chats. Dry chicken says, AEW bounce back. What a way to end their last pay-per-view show in 2020. And Naif Al-Safar, Naif, thank you very much. I'm going to be shouting you out tomorrow on the podcast as well. You are one of the bigger fans of the Sound Off. I really appreciate that. And before we move on here, Matthew. I told you I'm shouting everybody out tonight. Matthew with the $20. Just wanted to send a donation. Huge fan of you and your fair and honest opinions. Thank you for all of the hard work. Well, you keep watching. I'm here. I'm not going nowhere. In fact, I have another announcement to make about a stream coming up. I'll do that at the very end. So we got more content coming your way. There was an interview in the back with the Natural Nightmares, who I really don't care about, but the Natural Nightmares are still a thing. That's Dustin Rhodes and QT Marshall. They were in the back. And we got, I will say this, we got a very impassioned Dustin Rhodes promo. And Dustin Rhodes can still cut a very old school pro wrestling babyface promo. He's very, very good at that. We got one here. He was talking about the Butcher and the Blade, and he issued a challenge. They're going to be having a match this Wednesday on Dynamite. It's going to be a bunkhouse match. So they're going to have a bunkhouse match. It's going to be Butcher and Blade against Dustin and QT. They've also announced Tay Conti against Red Velvet. And as we already know, part two, the Lucha Bros one-on-one, Pentagon against Rey Fénix. Seems like that might have Pac written all over it. They had a Pac video package on the show this past week. I don't know what his track... My understanding is that the issue is not so much him getting into the country. The issue is him getting out of the country, if he had to get back out. So I don't know if they've resolved that or not, but if they're showing videos for him on TV, then he's coming back. And it could be as soon as this Wednesday. And maybe they'll try to reunite him and the Lucha Bros. And maybe Eddie Kingston will say, no, 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 no. He's with me now. So we'll see. We'll see, but that match is going to be, I'm sure it's going to be crazy. I just hope that Fénix doesn't kill himself, as he is known to do. Hikaru Shida, one-on-one with Nyla Rose for the AEW Women's Championship. Nyla was out there rocking Mega Man-inspired gear. It looked kind of familiar to me, and I couldn't place exactly, like, the colors. And then I saw it was Mega Man-inspired. Now, I haven't played Mega Man since Mega Man 2. So you tell me, what year was that? 1994, probably? When did Mega Man 2 come out? That was the last time I played Mega Man. Shida was very aggressive. Right out of the gate, she just went right after Nyla. The match, though, after that, for me, it just slowed to a crawl. This was the first point in the show where... And you have to have that match on the show where you bring the temperature down a little bit. You can't just be balls to the wall the whole time. By the time you get to the main event, you're going to be exhausted. This was the match for me where it just slowed to a friggin' crawl. And they were telling a story. Nyla was going after Sheeta's right knee. you know, at one point she kind of lifted up the ring skirt, and you could see the metal beams under the ring. She was wrenching on Sheeta's leg through the beam, so that was her target. Her target was Sheeta's knee. Tony Schiavone. I did laugh at this. So it wasn't her finish. Her finish is the Beast Bomb, but she gave Sheeta a power bomb. And potentially, Nyla Rose had the match won. Now, Nyla Rose is challenging for the championship. If you have the champion beat, you let the referee count. Instead, Nyla pulled her up at the count of two, which is something that you see heels doing in a match against a jobber, right? Just to kind of play with them and have fun. So she gave this woman a power bomb and picked her up at two. And Tony Schiavone just goes, "Oh my God, what is she doing?" And just the way he said it, I actually laughed. That was like the only entertaining part. One of the only entertaining parts for me of the match. Nyla wanted to deliver. The reason that she did that, though, she wanted to deliver Sheeta's own finishing move, the running knee strike, which she did. Sheeta kicked out at one. Sheeta with an avalanche falcon arrow. That was very impressive. And then Sheeta lifts Nyla off the mat at two. So she now is reciprocating. She's giving her a dose of her own medicine. Now she's picking her up. And Sheeta has this grin. She has this smile on her face. She hits the ropes and Vicky Guerrero is on the outside. Vicky grabs her foot and distracts her. So while she's distracted, Nyla knocks Sheeta off the apron. And Nyla follows Sheeta outside. And she's holding Sheeta. And Vicky Guerrero grabs a kendo stick. If I never see another fucking kendo stick for as long as I live, it would be a day too soon. And that's all because of WWE. Now we got AEW doing it. I have seen enough kendo sticks for the rest of 2020 and the first half of 2021. I know they make a cool noise, but please, enough with the kendo sticks. Thankfully, they weren't used. We didn't see them again for the rest of the night. But Vicky tried to use it. Referee Aubrey Edwards yanked the stick out of her hands. Sheeta shoved Nyla into Vicky. Vicky took a bump, very weak. You know, just a very weak, bad-looking bump. Back inside, Sheeta hit with the falcon arrow. Nyla kicks out. Running knee strike from Sheeta. And Nyla barely got the shoulder up. Actually, it looked more like Sheeta pulled off on her own. Started grabbing her knee. But Sheeta delivers another Tamashi running knee strike to the back of the head, and then three quick knee strikes to the face, and then she just collapses on top of Nyla, and she pins her 1-2-3. So the story here is this was the biggest battle that Hikaru Sheeta has faced yet as champion. She was her gas tank was on empty. She was exhausted. She could barely stand, but she pulled it out, and she got the win. I thought the last few minutes did not look pretty. The last few minutes and the finish, I thought, just did not look pretty at all. But Sheeta retains. This was the weakest thing on the entire show. Out of all the matches on this show, and some people might say Jericho and MJF. You know, they didn't blow me away either, but I thought this was the weakest thing on the show. Vicky is screaming at Nyla when the match is over. She slaps her, and then she leaves. Nyla did not smack her back. She did not respond. She just looked very sad and depressed. And then she walked away. Since these two were paired off, since Nyla announced that Vicky Guerrero was going to be her new manager, you could count probably on one hand and still have fingers left over the number of times these two have appeared together on TV. So I'm not even talking Dark. I'm talking on Dynamite. And now they're apparently, now maybe they're not going to split them up. Maybe it's just a little bump in the road. Maybe on TV this week, they're going to be back to, you know, back to normal. But now they're teasing a breakup already. I mean, this pairing has been a failure. I thought Vicky could be a positive and could add something to Nyla's act, but so far I have been proven wrong. This thing has been a failure. Macdin with the $5. It's a shame that they could not get a sellout crowd of over 10,000 because the matches in the card were deserving of it. Well, I think that is especially true of the next match I'm going to talk about here. Oz and Glorious. This pay-per-view was incredible. The Bucks versus FTR over-delivered. Well worth the money and time start to finish. And Charlie, what's going on, Charlie? Do you think they are setting up blood and guts for Darby and Cody against Team FTW? Boy, you know, they've been holding off on that blood and guts match. I think they really want, they wanted people in the building. And they would have had 10,000 people in Newark. You ain't going to get 10,000 people in the building for a long time. So if I'm them and I have an idea for blood and guts, yeah, I mean, maybe it's time to just start building up to it. And by that point, you might be able to have, do 1,000 people, 1,500, 2,000. Those 1,000 people were lively tonight. You know, the whole blood and guts thing, though, I think was going to be their version of War Games. So I don't know if they could fit two rings in Daly's place. I don't see why not. They don't have fans down by ringside. It's just wrestlers. So, I mean, I would think they could do pretty much anything they want to. Maybe they are. But if they're waiting for 5,000 or 10,000 people, they're going to be waiting a long time, unfortunately. And Spanish Goddess making his presence known. Pay-per-view of the year. Wow. He thought it was the pay-per-view of the year. And not going to lie, I was expecting for the big debut all night. I hope you're not still talking about Sting. I put this to bed on Wednesday night, all the Sting stuff. You get your fans do this all the time. They get their hopes up. They get wrapped up in one little internet report, and they get their hopes up. If you went into the show tonight expecting that, well, you know what? You got what you deserve. You should have listened to the stream on Wednesday. Then you wouldn't have been so disappointed. We had the Young Bucks against FTR for the AEW Tag Team Championships. If the Bucks do not win the titles, they can never again challenge for the belts. And Tully Blanchard was banned from ringside. So no Tully, no interference. This is a match that was probably, 4 years in the making? From the time these two teams started to tease the fact that they wanted to wrestle each other and the tweets were going out, I think it was 4 years ago. And you hype something up for so long. Yeah, you hype something up for years and people's expectations go sky high. And when the day finally comes that you're ready to get in the ring and deliver, if you can't, you're going to end up disappointing a whole bunch of people. So they talk this thing up. Oh, when these two teams meet, it's going to be glorious. We're going to have the greatest tag team wrestling match of all time. It was not the greatest tag team match of all time, but they did live up to expectations. And the first, I don't know, probably 8 to 10 minutes of the match, I didn't think they were going to. I did not think they were going to. I was looking at the clock. I'm like, all right, well, this is going slower than I'd like for it to go. But then it grew and it built and it built and it built because they were telling a story, which is what they were doing with Matt's ankle injury when he was attacked by FTR a couple of weeks ago and they stomped on the ankle. They were telling that part of the story going into the pay-per-view. That played into the match here. Having now seen the match, I think they may have bested the Revolution match from earlier this year that the Bucks had with Hangman and Kenny Omega. I haven't watched the match since February. I mean, I love that match. I thought that match was just tremendous. That match also had the benefit of being in front of a packed crowd. I don't know how many people were in the building for Revolution. It was a big crowd. I don't know if it was 10,000. It was at least 5. And it's just, when you have a packed crowd like that, it's just a different atmosphere. It's a different kind of match. So it's almost unfair to compare the two. But this is definitely in the conversation with that match as Tag Team Match of the Year. The Bucks came out dressed. Their gear had Lakers colors. And FTR had Celtics colors. So it was the Lakers and the Celtics, I guess, right? L.A. and Boston. So Harwood, early on in the match, he's wrestling outside the ring with Matt Jackson. And Matt ducked a punch. Harwood struck the ring post. So he got stiff with the ring post. Well, guess what? The ring post has no give. So the ring post doesn't really give a shit. And if you're going to punch the ring post as hard as you can, you're going to get hurt. And that's what happened to Dax Harwood here. His hand came up bleeding. He ended up going over to Dr. Samson by the timekeeper's table. He had to have his, I think it was his thumb, taped up. And he was probably going to sell a hand injury anyway, but you could see the hand was bloodied. So he had the hand taped up for the rest of the match. They were working over Matt Jackson's bad ankle. Nick made the hot tag after he was worked over for a while. He was watching his brother just get his ass handed to him. Finally, Nick makes the hot tag. He goes wild. Matt makes a blind tag, goes for a power bomb, but his knee buckles under the weight. FTR hits a top rope, assisted Bulldog, and even Excalibur, or maybe Tony Schiavone. Tony Schiavone was thinking the exact same thing that I was. It was the old Steiner Brothers finisher, the top rope assisted Bulldog, where Scott would have the opponent in the electric chair, Rick would go up top. Unfortunately, it's the same move Rick did to Buff Bagwell when he broke Buff's neck in WCW. I think it was an episode of Thunder. No broken necks here. But what was cool is, so FTR hits this, right? They hit the top rope assisted Bulldog. And immediately after hitting the move, Cash Wheeler, who I thought was fantastic in this match, Wheeler more than Harwood, but Wheeler was really impressive in this match. He immediately charged at Nick Jackson, who was in his corner on the apron. He did the Big E dive. And I hate it when Big E does it, because Big E is a big guy. He does it in every match. And I am stunned that he has not broken his shoulder. I'm sure he's doing damage every time he lands on it. It will come back to haunt him. But Wheeler did the Big E dive. He speared Nick Jackson. It was almost like one fluid motion. He came off the top and then immediately, boom, speared him right off the apron to the floor. It was actually one of the cool spots of probably the coolest spot of the match. Harwood goes for the pin on Matt. Matt kicks out. Harwood hit a rebound powerbomb, bounced him off the top rope. But Matt cradled him with a crucifix for a near fall. And it was probably about 20 minutes in at this point. I think the match went about 25, so we were closing in on the final minutes of the match here. Matt went for a super kick. Harwood met it with a right hand. And so Matt now is selling his ankle, and Harwood is selling his hand. He got the walking wounded here in this match. Harwood just destroys Matt with a lariat. And FTR hits the old DIY. The old Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa finish for a near fall. Excalibur, literally on commentary, Excalibur said, FTR taking a page out of DIY's playbook. I wonder if, like, Tony Schiavone, for example, knew what he was even talking about. Jim Ross might have known. But I wonder if Tony put two and two together and was wondering what he was talking about there. But I love that. I love the fact, you know, DIY in the Revival had a couple of classics. One of which I think was, I think they did two takeovers from Toronto, if I'm not mistaken. And I want to say it was the first match they had in 2016 in Toronto. That is probably one of the best tag team matches I've ever seen between DIY and the Revival. So I like that little callback. So Matt Jackson puts the sharpshooter on. Harwood gets to the ropes. Nick, though, super kicks Harwood's injured hand. So he super kicks the hand off the ropes. Nick is on the ramp. It's on the stage, just outside the ring. And he locks the sharpshooter on Wheeler. And so now Wheeler is reaching out and trying to lock hands with Harwood. They're in pain. They're both locked in the sharpshooters. And eventually the pain was just too much for Matt Jackson on his ankle. He had to let go. He let go of the hold. So the Bucks hit the BTE trigger. That looked like it was going to be it. Wheeler, though, comes out of nowhere, breaks up the pin. Matt grabs a chair. And Matt Jackson brings a chair into the ring. Now, remember, this is not a no DQ match. And the stipulation, which now that we've seen the match in hindsight, I can say that it was a stupid idea. I don't like the fact that they added that stip. It's the same stipulation that Cody had in his match at Full Gear last year, and it just completely telegraphs the finish. Now, yeah, you're thinking, okay, maybe it'll be some kind of swerve, but I didn't really think there was going to be one just because they already did that with Cody. So when you do a stipulation like that, if I don't win, I'm going to retire. If I don't win, I'm never going to ever challenge for the belts. You know, it's an unnecessary stipulation, and you're just telegraphing the finish by doing it. There were a lot of people who probably would not have known which way this match was going to go, and when they added the stipulation, they were like, all right, the Bucks are going to win. I don't think you should do that. Unless you have a really good reason to do it, just don't do that, because you're just spoiling the match for people and taking some of the drama out of it. But I guess they wanted to play it up for drama. I mean, you could look at it that way, I guess. But anyway, he had a chair, and Harwood realized, he goes, yeah, hit me. Give me a chair shot to the head. And he's pointing at his skull, like, go ahead, hit me, because if he gets DQ'd, they keep the belts. So Matt drops the chair. He thinks better of it. And Wheeler powerbombs Nick, right? So they're getting ready to do, I think, maybe the Meltzer driver. Indy Taker or Meltzer driver. I always confuse the two. So Nick Jackson, though, he's on the apron, right? He's getting ready for the move. Well, Wheeler comes from underneath him, picks him up at a powerbomb position. And he was supposed to powerbomb him, I think, through the timekeeper's table, but he bounced. It didn't break. I'm sure it didn't feel good either way, but the table did not break. FTR hits the mind breaker, have the match won. Matt's leg, though, touched the bottom rope, so the match continues. Harwood puts the, he pulls off Matt's boot, he pulls off Matt's sock, and he puts the Indian Deathlock on him. They're gonna try to really break this guy's ankle. Nick Jackson eventually recovers. He breaks it up with a 450 splash. Wheeler levels Nick with a super kick. He flips off Matt, flips him the bird, and hits him with a super kick. And then Cash Wheeler makes a very grave mistake here in this match. And I'll tell you why I love this part in a second. Cash Wheeler goes and he does a springboard 450. A springboard 450. Now, I don't think I've ever seen Wheeler hit that move, so that was impressive. But he hits a springboard 450, and he misses. He misses the move. Matt Jackson hits a super kick, falls on top of Wheeler, gets the pin. 1, 2, 3. And the Young Bucks, for the first time in their career, are AEW Tag Team Champions. If anybody ever tells you that the Young Bucks, they're just, you know, all the flippy stuff, right? That the Young Bucks, they don't know wrestling psychology. They don't know ring psychology. Just show them this match. Show them this match and just tell them that they're an idiot. I don't want to hear that argument ever again. Because that ring psychology actually bored me for the first 8 to 10 minutes of the match. I don't want to ever hear that the Young Bucks don't know anything about psychology. Yeah, they do. They do a lot of flips and kicks. More than they probably should. But I think we can probably bury that argument once and for all. If not, you're just being ignorant or dumb or maybe a combination of both. But I loved that it was a flip that ended up costing FTR the tag team titles in this match. When he missed that 450, that set the finish up. This is a team that always says no flips, just fists. And it was a flip that cost them the match and cost them the belts. I love that. Kenny Omega came down. He was celebrating with the Bucks when the match was over. The announcers never acknowledged him by name. But in one of the entrance tunnels, you could see Hangman Page. And it looked like he might have had a drink in his hand, of course. But there was Hangman Page. He didn't come out. He was in the tunnel. And he was looking very dejected and very, you know, alone and, you know, in his feel. I mean, look, he lost, so he's going to be in a bad mood. But he did not come to the ring to celebrate with the Bucks. I thought this was an excellent match. Started slow, and it built, and it built, and it built. And this, as somebody in the Super Chats a few minutes ago mentioned, as great as I thought this match was, and the crowd was hot for it. The 1,000 people who were there were hot for it. But this match, like Revolution, let's say in front of that Revolution crowd, this match would have gotten over exactly the same way. This match would be on the next level up. That's what a loud, packed building can do for a match like this. So that's the only thing this match was missing. Again, not a fan of the stipulation they added. I think it was completely unnecessary. But this was an excellent tag team match. And I would say that all the hype, it delivered. For me, it delivered. Because I was not a huge fan of the build-up. I mean, it just felt very flat. It didn't feel like it was as big of a deal as it should have been. But I never doubted they would go in there and have a good match. But they had a great match. So, I don't know if, again, I don't know if I would say my favorite match of the night. It's between this and the opening match. But it's one of the two. Dry Chicken with yet another super chat. Supporting the show, as always. Theodore Bond. Been listening since episode 60. Thanks for always being the best of the best when it comes to wrestling podcasting. Jackalope Music with a hearty congratulations to Darby Allin. And also buy or sell more Vicky Guerrero on the microphone in the women's segments and or in general. No, I will sell. Sell, sell, sell. What's that guy on CNBC, Mad Money, Jim Cramer? Sell, sell, sell. Colin, the Elite will take all of the AEW gold at the next pay-per-view in February and reform their version of the Bullet Club, hinting at a New Japan crossover. Interesting. I can't say that I would be against that. I actually think I would like that. But now you're getting my hopes up, and you're probably setting me up for disappointment. So. And the cheeseburger. I thought the Young Bucks were actually going to lose to FTW and introduce the TNT tag team titles on an upcoming episode of Dynamite. Damn good pay-per-view, though. So now it was time for the Elite deletion match. I don't even fucking know how I'm supposed to describe this. I'm going to do the best job I possibly can. Shout out to a good buddy of mine, Good Mike Work. Another podcaster. Got to meet up with him, in fact, on the Jericho Cruise earlier this year. Good guy. I saw him make a comment that, how are you, as a podcaster, how are you supposed to review a match like this? And I think my answer would be poorly. Because how do you do it? Matt Hardy against Sammy Guevara. Cinematic style from the Hardy compound. These two have not had a lot of luck together. Matt Hardy has been nearly killed. Sammy Guevara's been hurt. Matt's been hurt. So this was a taped, perhaps heavily edited match. Probably the safest match they could possibly do. And hopefully the final one, because what this felt like was a total blow-off. This was the end. This was the final chapter of the story. If this was a book, this was the final chapter. We had Hardy outside of his house. He was on the phone with somebody we didn't know who, asking them to be ready in case he needed backup. We see Sammy Guevara driving a golf cart. He's got a history of being chased by those. Sammy drives a golf cart to the Hardy compound. They are in Cameron, North Carolina. Cameron, North Carolina. Matt's drone, what does he call it, Neo? All right, that's the new drone. The old one was Vanguard 1. This one, I think, is Neo. Neo disabled the power to Sammy's golf cart. So he's trying to drive it, and it's not going anywhere. And now we cut to Matt, and Matt is in this, like, makeshift monster truck. I don't know where he gets this shit from, but he's got to have, like, the coolest, like, his property, all the acres of land that he owns, and the garage with all the, with the ring and all the other stuff he's got. I mean, it's like this giant adult playground that he has there. Probably in the middle of nowhere. I would think his neighbor, like his nearest neighbor, is probably like 20 minutes away. So when he's setting off fireworks and explosions and stuff, there's probably nobody around who hears any of it. I mean, this he's got everything on that property there. But he had a monster truck, and he drives over the golf cart. Thankfully, Sammy was not inside. Somehow Sammy got out, and he attacks Matt from behind with a garbage can, and there's a referee, and here we go. We have an official match. I guess falls count anywhere. Anything goes. They're in the middle of the woods. It's late at night. It's like Final Deletion, right? They're in the woods. Eventually, they brawl onto the front lawn. So you see the Hardy house. They're on the front lawn, suplexing each other on the ground. There's a giant fountain nearby. Sammy tries to drown Matt in the fountain. Matt reaches into the fountain water, and he pulls out the scepter of Mephistopheles, I think is what they refer to it as. And he uses the scepter of Mephistopheles, whatever the fuck that is, as a weapon on Sammy. So now they go a few feet over, and there just so happens to be a wrestling ring. Matt has two rings on the property. One is in his garage, and then the other one is just out in the open. And it has the AEW Full Gear ring skirt. Like, this thing is ready. This thing's ready for the pay-per-view. So they end up in the ring. Matt sets a table up inside. He powerbombs Sammy through the table. Before he can get the pin, though, who runs in? Ortiz. And there's Santana. So now it's 3-on-1. They're ganging up on Matt. Matt grabs a walkie-talkie, and he's communicating with someone, and they cut, and we see Private Party is in a car. Matt communicates with them. They say that we're on our way. And so Private Party make their way onto the property. They make their way into the ring. Even the odds now, they're attacking Santana and Ortiz. Matt grabs some Roman candles from underneath the ring. He lights one. He aims the fireworks in the direction of the ring. Sammy has a Roman candle of his own. He's on the opposite side. And he lights his up. They start firing at each other. Matt is like, he's like burrowed into the dirt like some great general in a war. I made the comment. I said, instead of saving Private Ryan, this was like saving Private Party. And they're firing fireworks back and forth at each other. So now they're fighting over towards the Lake of Reincarnation. They're fighting over by the lake. All of a sudden, a masked man appears. And he's got Hurricane Helms, who must own the gimmick because he was Hurricane Helms, the costume and everything. So I assume he owns the gimmick. The guy is talking in this distorted voice. We don't know who it is. And he reveals himself to be Gangrel. Gangrel's a pretty cool guy. If you've seen any of Gangrel's interviews, he did an interview actually recently with Chris Van Vliet that was very good. I've never heard anything bad about Gangrel. He just seems like the coolest guy, laid back, very knowledgeable. He's helped train people over the years. He still looks good, keeps himself in shape. He's been around forever. I mean, my God. I mean, I remember reading about this guy in like The Observer when he was the Vampire Warrior, and that was probably, I don't even know how long ago that was. So he looks good, and you know, he just, every time I hear him and I see an interview with him, he just seems like a really cool guy that you would want to hang out with. Plus, I think he used to be a porn director. I mean, how cool is that? He's a multi-talented man. But the masked man was, in fact, Gangrel. Private Party comes over to attack. What was cool about this was a continuation of a storyline from a Hardy cinematic match in WWE. WWE never took full advantage of the Broken Universe, even though they owned it. They had the rights to it. They had to get the rights to it from Impact. You remember that whole battle? Impact owned the rights to the Hardy Universe. WWE had to get it away from Impact. And then what did WWE do with it? They did one Halloween special, and that was it. They didn't do fuck all with any of this stuff. And there was an audience for it. I know not everybody likes it, but there was an audience for it. And they didn't do anything. But they did one Halloween special on the network. And if you remember how that special ended, it ended with Hurricane Helms being tied up and held hostage by some mystery guy in a mask. His voice was being distorted. They continued the storyline from the Halloween special in WWE here in AEW, which I thought was very clever. And it's funny, too, because when Hurricane sees Matt, he goes, what took you so long? He goes, I've been tied up and held hostage now for a couple of years. So what took you so long? And Matt says, well, it's called long-term storytelling. He says, I had to come to AEW to finish the story. So Hurricane ends up being thrown into the Lake of Reincarnation. He emerges a minute later as the roving reporter Gregory Helms. I don't even think he did that gimmick for that long in WWE, but he transforms into Gregory Helms. He ended up getting tossed back into the lake, came back out as Hurricane Helms. So now we're back in the ring. If I have one criticism of this, this went longer than it should have. On a pay-per-view that was already going very late, they should have cut time on this. This dragged on way longer than it needed to go on for. They cut back to the ring, and it's just random brawling in the ring. Private Party, Santana, Ortiz, Gangrel, Hurricane Helms. Like, what's going on here? So Sammy and Matt, they go off. Sammy ends up getting trapped in the Dome of Deletion, which is Matt's garage. I should come up with names for the different rooms in my apartment here. Crazy names. I've been stuck here barely going anywhere for 9 months. I should come up with names for each of these rooms. This is my studio. I should come up with some kind of name for it. It's like my lair. But he calls it the Dome of Deletion. And now Sammy is trapped in there with Matt and a referee and a camera guy. And that's it. Matt lays, and there's a ring. There is another ring inside the Dome of Deletion. Matt lays Sammy lays Matt across a table in the ring, and he gets this gigantic ladder, 10 to 12 foot tall ladder, and he climbs the ladder, and he hits a swanton bomb off the ladder down onto Matt through the table, hurts his neck on the way down. Matt kicks out. Sammy's on the apron, and Matt, when he recovers, he spears Sammy. They go flying off the ring apron, and we don't see it, but down through two tables outside the ring. And through the power of editing, they then cut to the tables. We see Sammy Guevara bleeding from the back of the head. There's a pool of blood on the ground. So what they were doing here is they were playing off the very real injury that Matt sustained in the match at All Out. When Matt took that horrifying bump on the concrete in a very much live match, not taped and edited, and smacked the back of his head, and I legitimately, for a few seconds, thought he was dead. So they were playing off that pool of blood underneath Sammy's head, and Hardy grabs a chair. So Sammy now is face down on the ground, and Matt gives him a one-man concerto, smashes the chair over the back of the head. Hardy, when Sammy eventually stumbles to his feet. Actually, I think before that happened, Sammy had stumbled to his feet. Matt threw a chair in his face, which again is payback for what Sammy did to him when he busted Matt open on Dynamite many moons ago. I think then came the one-man concerto, and then he got the win. He calls Private Party in to the Dome of Deletion and says, help me get rid of this guy. And they stuff him in a garbage pail. They put him on the back of a pickup truck, and Senor Benjamin, who got the biggest pop, I think, of anybody involved in this match, when they cut to show him in the driver's seat, he drives Sammy off. So poor Sammy Guevara is taken away. We see Rebby Hardy playing the piano, and the parting final shot here of this match, if you could call it a match, is Matt Hardy, Rebby, Private Party, and Hurricane Helms celebrating. Fireworks are going off, and that was the Elite Deletion. I enjoyed it for what it was. I think it should be a while before we see another one of these cinematic type matches, but this was exactly what I expected it to be. And they closed the book. They closed the final chapter of this story. I just didn't think it needed to be as long as it was. This show is long enough as it is. I did not need this to go on that long. We got a very quick segment from somewhere, in an alleyway somewhere. Jake Roberts was with Lance Archer. Lance Archer was beating some guy up. That's usually what these segments are. It's just him beating up random dudes. And Jake is just standing there talking about Lance having nothing to do with it. It seems like they keep falling back into this pattern. They never have anything for Lance Archer to do. And Jake is always just complaining. Well, you know, he's got nothing to do. We're kind of bored here. He goes, you know, Lance used to have four guys he trained with, and now he has none. And says he's got to feed this guy, but he doesn't want food. He wants people. and Archer cut a promo of his own. I was watching Jake here. I don't know how many of you saw the interview that Jake just gave. It was on another podcast. It was a video, so it's on YouTube. And he was wearing oxygen. So he had the oxygen tube, and he opened the interview talking about why he had the oxygen. He had an oxygen tank next to him. And he was saying he can't really speak for more than a few seconds at a time without being hooked up to the oxygen because his health has gotten really bad recently. Apparently, he has really bad COPD. COPD is a condition that a lot of smokers, people who have smoked for a lifetime, have COPD. It is not fun at all. And he even said in the interview, because Jake has smoked his whole life, he said, man, if I could tell people one thing not to do, do not smoke, because now he's paying the price for it. And I was watching because he was doing a lot of talking here. I didn't see any oxygen. Doesn't mean he wasn't hooked up to it. He might have been. So it's gotten pretty bad, apparently, if he's got to be hooked up to oxygen. So I think it's cool that he's still, you know, part of the act here with Archer, and they have a role for him on the show, and he's still a good promo. But that was kind of rough to see him in that kind of shape. Because, again, you know, he turned his life around, and a lot of the bad habits he had and the bad stuff he was doing, it seems like he's in a better position and doing better than Scott Hall is. I don't know what's going on with Scott Hall. But Jake seems to have turned his life around in a meaningful way, you know. And if this condition is going to flare up now and get worse, hopefully that doesn't affect other aspects of his life. But anyway, Lance Archer is looking for something to do. Joe Olivo with the $10. Young Bucks are clutch, beating FTR. What do you think of FTR versus Young Bucks 2 at Revolution in 2021? Man, bring it on. I never expected it to be one and done. I mean, they promoted the shit out of this for 4 years. You really think they're going to just do one match and move on? So I would expect there to be a rematch, at least one. Oz and Glorious, I'm down with Sheeta and her kendo stick. Once again, WWE ruins everything. Well, they ruined the kendo stick for me. I'm sorry. I don't blame Sheeta, but the kendo stick stuff. Hell in a Cell was like my breaking point. Hell in a Cell, I felt like every fucking match on that card had kendo sticks involved. It's like, please, can we stop with the clutch or the crutch? Clutch? I don't even know what I'm saying. The crutch of the kendo sticks? What is worse, Vicky Guerrero's voice or Eddie Kingston's ring work? Oh, that's mean. Oz and Glorious is being very mean. I'll say Vicky. Random Human. Dustin might be able to use the Goldust gimmick on AEW if Andrew Yang is part of Biden's cabinet. Do you want to see Goldust on AEW? No, I have no interest in seeing Goldust in AEW. I see no need for Goldust. Dustin Rhodes, you know, when he has a good opponent or a, you know, a good program or whatever. You know, Dustin Rhodes, everybody knows at this point who Dustin Rhodes is. He's been around forever. To then put him in the Goldust costume, what purpose would that serve? Besides, I don't think he'd be able to do that anyway. That's a WWE. That is definitely a Vince McMahon gimmick. I don't think he owns that. Dried Chicken, the Young Bucks and FTR ring gear was great. Both Magic Johnson and Larry Bird would be proud tonight. And Garrus Vicarian, Larry Bird is a better trash talker than FTR. That he is. That is a part of FTR's work that needs a lot of work. They are not great promos. I have not been impressed with FTR's promos. Their ring work is very good. But I think their promos, and for that matter, the Bucks too. The Bucks and FTR did not get this feud over on mic work. The way that Eddie Kingston, for example, and Jon Moxley got their main event over on the mic. The Young Bucks and FTR, yeah, you're not selling me on that match on their mic work. You're going to sell that match on their ring work, or you're not going to sell it at all. That is definitely not their strong suit. Sorry to say. Chris Jericho against MJF. If MJF wins, he gets to join the Inner Circle. Heel versus heel except for the fact that Jericho got a babyface reaction. This crowd made their choice. They did not like MJF, and they cheered Chris Jericho. And they sang his song. MJF came out. He was wearing his own light bright jacket, so he kind of fooled people into thinking it was Jericho, but in fact it was not. Jericho went for a Judas effect. MJF avoided it. Jericho's elbow struck the ring post, and MJF maintained the advantage back in the ring. See, I don't like that. I don't like, because we just had that spot in the previous match with Harwood punching the ring post. So the fact, now you're doing the same spot back-to-back matches. That's just a lack of communication there. I would not be doing that in back-to-back matches like that. Although I guess technically it wasn't back-to-back if you count the Hardy match as a match. I don't really do. I count that as a segment. It wasn't really a match. Jericho hit a top rope Frankensteiner. I have to give him credit for this. This is the first time I have seen Chris Jericho hit a top rope Frankensteiner. I'm sure he did it in WWE, maybe in the matches with Benoit, but Jericho hitting a top rope Frankensteiner, the last time I saw him do that, it might have been against Blitzkrieg for the Cruiserweight title on Monday Nitro. It's been a long time. So Jericho impressed me on that. The rest of the match, he was moving around like he was his age. He was moving around like a 50-year-old. But on that, it was like, wow, all right, Jericho with the Frankensteiner. That's impressive. MJF cut him off, put the Salt of the Earth armbar on. Jericho countered that into the Walls of Jericho. MJF made the ropes. MJF went for the Heat Seeker, but he hit a Code Breaker instead and then hit the Heat Seeker for a near fall. MJF went for a Lion Salt. Jericho turned it into a Code Breaker, and MJF caught a Judas Effect attempt. He turned it into the Salt of the Earth. He's wrenching back on the arm. Jericho makes it to the ropes. MJF calls for Wardlow to come on down. Here comes Wardlow. He's got the Dynamite Diamond Ring, and he feeds it to MJF, and Wardlow is distracting the referee. He tries to use the ring on Jericho. Jericho ducks it, though, but Jake Hager, I don't know where he came from, but Jake Hager appeared. He tossed the baseball bat, Floyd the baseball bat, into the ring to Jericho. So now Jericho's got the bat. MJF looks at him. He smiles. He flips him off, and he drops to the mat, Eddie Guerrero style. Plays possum. Referee turns around, and what does the referee see? The referee sees Jericho with a bat in his hand and sees MJF laying on the ground. And Jericho is trying his best now not to be disqualified. While he is distracted, he gets rolled up. MJF holds on to the tights, and he gets the win. I get that they're both heels, and so you would expect both of them are going to cheat and do whatever they can do to win, but still. Holding on to the tights to win, not really a huge fan of that finish. But Jericho, he did shake hands when the match was over. He let bygones be bygones. He shook hands with MJF. MJF is now a member of the Inner Circle. Not just MJF, Wardlow as well. Wardlow is very standoffish with Hager. Santana and Ortiz and Sammy obviously were not there, but MJF and Wardlow are now part of the Inner Circle. So again, I think they're going to be buddies for a while. They're not really friends, but they're going to pretend to be buddies for a while. We're best friends. Maybe they'll even try to go for the tag team titles. Because I think Jericho and MJF as a team for a while makes more sense than Jericho and Hager. I don't give a shit about Jericho and Hager. But Jericho and MJF will be buddy-buddy for a while. But MJF, I think the end goal here is that he's going to work to turn the Inner Circle inside out. He's going to turn people against each other. He is going to get Jericho ousted from his own group. And it may take months to play out. But they have a lot of different directions they could go in here, which I like. But I think that's probably the direction that we're headed in. Going to try to get this guy ousted from his own group. Revolution is the next pay-per-view, Saturday, February 27th. So Revolution is going to be the next big AEW event. Yukio rules with the $15. If I were a wrestler, I would dedicate every dive I did to Solomonster. Yeah, well, I bet you would. Because, you know, I'm such a big fan of dives in wrestling. All these wrestlers, they missed their calling. They should have been Olympic swimmers. All the dives they do. Eminem, Lord Frieza is my new tag team partner. SB42, don't care. This was the second best cinematic since Final Deletion. Really, no fan of the Boneyard match? Are we all just beyond that now? Have we come down from the high of the Boneyard match at WrestleMania? People are turning against it now. Don't say that, because if you start saying that, then The Undertaker's going to want to come back for another match, and we don't need to see that. Sean D says, why not call this room the Den of Depravity? Well, that would be an appropriate name for it. I am open to suggestions. John Moxley against Eddie Kingston. I quit match for the AEW World Championship. The first ever I quit match in AEW history between these two men here. And here we have Eddie Kingston. Eddie Kingston is a man who was selling his ring gear earlier this year to help pay for the mortgage on his home. COVID hit a lot of people in a lot of different ways. It obviously hit the independent wrestling scene very hard in ways that it may never fully recover from. And so he was selling his gear to try to pay his mortgage. And he was a month away. Eddie Kingston was a month away from selling his house in Florida and moving back in with his parents in New York. And he was in the car with his girlfriend when he got the phone call. This was probably after he had that basically tryout match or the TNT title match with Cody. And he got the phone call when he was in the car telling him that he was being signed to a contract, and he started bawling his eyes out, which he did not like doing because he has to keep up the whole New York tough guy thing, but it's a great story. And here we are, right? This was a big moment for Eddie Kingston challenging in the main event of this pay-per-view for the world championship. And yes, Eddie Kingston, somebody in the Super Chats made fun of it a little while ago. He's not any kind of spectacular in-ring performer. His physique is not great. Frankly, I think his physique, and he may even admit this, is what held him back. It certainly is not his mic skills. And as a wrestler, he's fine. I mean, he could work. But he never worked on his physique. Which is why I'm sure that's why we never saw him in WWE. You know, he's not, when you look at him compared to some of the other people on the roster, he's not much to look at. But his biggest attribute is his mouth. And you put a mic in this guy's hand and he can sell you. He sold me on this match. I think he sold a lot of people. He may have sold a lot of pay-per-views. So this was a big night for him. Excalibur talked about Sweet and Sour Larry Sweeney. I love the Larry Sweeney mention. Larry Sweeney is somebody who would absolutely, absolutely be on television right now. Probably in WWE. WWE, NXT, AEW, he would be a wrestler, he would be a manager, he would be in the middle of everything. He was that talented. And it sucks that he took his own life at such a young age. I love the fact that Excalibur mentioned him and the fact that he was very close with Eddie Kingston. And he mentioned how his death really impacted Kingston, which is a shoot. I think his death impacted a lot of people who knew him. But trying to weave it into the story, he and Sweeney and Moxley, they all came up on the independent circuit together. They were all friends. And when he passed away and then Moxley went and signed with WWE, he saw that. He took that personally. And he saw that as something of a betrayal. So that was part of the story they told coming into this match. They brawled into the empty crowd because all the fans, the 1,000 people, they're up there. They're in the upper deck. Down below, the only people you've got down there are the wrestlers. So it's all emptiness. They brawled into the emptiness of the crowd for a while. They brawled back to ringside. Moxley got his forehead busted open. So now he's bleeding from the forehead. He grabs a barbed wire bat from underneath the ring. He brings it inside. Moxley with the barbed wire bat, he hits Kingston in the midsection with it. Hits Kingston across the back with it. Now he's digging it into his forehead. Kingston is screaming. Kingston comes back with a series of suplexes, cracks a chair across Moxley's back. Eddie Kingston, with his bare hand, removes a strand of barbed wire from the bat. And he begins to wrap, and now he's screaming because it hurts, right? This fucking idiot is wrapping barbed wire around his hand. Of course it hurts. He's wrapping it around his hand, around his fist, starts pounding away on Moxley's head. I always love when John Moxley has a match like this. The first thing I do is I go and I check Renee Young, her Twitter, and she's always freaking out. So I always find it hilarious that she's watching, obviously she's watching her husband, and she is just having constant panic attacks. So every time he does something insanely stupid during these matches, I'm like, let's go to Renee and see what she thinks. And she's probably having a meltdown at home. And tonight was no different. Kingston hits a spinning back fist into a Kimura lock on Moxley. Moxley, to try to get out of the Kimura lock, he bites Kingston on the leg. And that worked. He got him to break the hold. Kingston sets up two chairs in the ring. He ends up getting suplexed onto them. I believe he was the one who was suplexed onto them. So he goes out of the ring, and Kingston grabs a sack. He grabs his sack from underneath the ring. He brings it into the ring, and yes, it is full of thumbtacks. He spreads them in the corner all around. Jim Ross at first called them thumbticks before he corrected himself, which sounds like something you should probably let a doctor look at. Kingston suplexed Moxley onto the tacks. And now he's got tacks sticking in his arm, sticking in his back. Kingston goes over to the doctor, Dr. Samson, outside the ring. And he grabs a bottle of rubbing alcohol. And he brings the bottle of rubbing alcohol into the ring. He keeps asking Moxley, do you quit? Moxley says no. Moxley flipped him off at one point. He's stomping him on his balls. And then he grabs a rubbing alcohol. And he pours the rubbing alcohol, opens the cap, and he pours the rubbing alcohol all over Moxley's back. And the open wounds, which are bleeding from the tacks. And Moxley is selling this like he's in great pain. Now, in my mind, I'd like to think, okay, they filled it with water. But knowing these two guys, they didn't fill it with water. I'm sure there was rubbing alcohol in there, and these guys are just out of their fucking minds. So he's pouring rubbing alcohol on the open wounds, and honestly, of all the things they did to each other in this match, the barbed wire and everything, I mean, the way the match ended, that was pretty violent. But I think of all the spots that they did in this match with the weapons and everything, the one that made me cringe the most, that I thought was the most brutal, was probably that spot. And just the idea that if you've ever had, you know, rubbing alcohol put on a wound, if you've scraped your knee when you were a kid or something, right? It burns. Now imagine your whole back is filled with puncture wounds from thumbtacks. See, that's a spot that I can relate to. That's a spot that makes me look away. It fucking hurts. That was creative. I thought that was clever. Kingston grabs a handful of tacks. He punches Moxley with them right in the head. Puts the bulldog choke on. Moxley gets out of it. He hits a pile driver. We got a Minoru Suzuki reference on commentary. Anytime we get a Minoru Suzuki reference is A-OK. Now we got to get Minoru Suzuki on AEW television. That's the next step. He just lost his never open weight title. He's got nothing going on. Let's get him some appearances on Dynamite soon. Paradigm Shift connects. Kingston will not quit. Remember, it's I quit. Can't pin him. He will not quit. Moxley wraps that single strand of barbed wire around his arm, and he locks the bulldog choke in with the barbed wire. The barbed wire is digging into Kingston's face, and finally, Eddie Kingston, the big tough guy from the Bronx, says, I quit. And John Moxley retains the AEW championship. That makes 2 years in a row of Moxley doing the deathmatch main event at Full Gear. It was brutal. And like I said, the rubbing alcohol spot was, I thought that was unique. And that was the one that I thought was the most brutal spot of the entire match. I think I'm just desensitized to the thumbtack stuff. So for me, it was the rubbing alcohol. It was exactly what I expected it to be. Nobody expected Eddie Kingston to win the championship. Nobody. So the outcome was never really in doubt. You expected these two guys to go in there and bleed, and they both did, although not a lot, but, you know, Eddie Kingston had blood coming from his mouth, and obviously they were cut up from the tacks and stuff, and maybe the barbed wire. But this was exactly what you would expect it to be. It was a street fight. It was violent. It was a little bloody. And in the end, Jon Moxley, he got a hard-fought win. And now we move on to the next phase, which is going to be, and Kenny Omega came out here to confront Moxley. He didn't get in the ring, but they did kind of go face-to-face. And he is next in line now for a challenge for the championship. Even though I think in the rankings, I haven't checked them, but I think Brian Cage is listed at number one in the rankings. This is what Taz was complaining about on TV the other night. But Omega earned the right to challenge for the title, and that has got to be your main event at Revolution in February on the 27th. Now, we have a ways to go before we get there, so maybe Brian Cage, you know, maybe he will get a title match on TV. If he is ranked number one, he could be the one getting a title match first, but I would not rush into Omega and Moxley. When they do meet, I think Kenny Omega is the guy, I think he should be the guy, to take the championship away from Moxley. Moxley will have the title for one full year. If he gets to Revolution, that's where he beat Jericho for it. It'll be one full year. I think that's where he drops the belt to Kenny Omega. Omega has a run for himself with the belt. Hangman Page is the one to eventually take the title from Omega. That's the story arc here. That's the way this needs to play out. So that's how I see this playing out. I thought this was an excellent show, top to bottom. This was probably the best AEW show of the year, not just of the pandemic era, but even the first couple of months of the year. Revolution was a very good show. Revolution was an excellent show, but I think this one may have been better. Again, I haven't seen Revolution since I watched it the first time, so I'd have to go back and compare, but this was a definite rebound from All Out, no doubt about that. Huge rebound from the All Out show, without question. I don't even think that can be debated. I mean, just look at this score. 86, almost 87% thumbs up. 13%, I feel like John King now on CNN giving you guys percentages. Let's check in now in Allegheny County. We've got 86.8% of the vote in, and we've got 13.2% here. But there you go. That's the percentages right now. You guys can vote at Solomonster. On Twitter, poll's going to be up for a few days, so you guys can chime in and let me know what you thought of the event tonight. I want to get all your feedback, plus in the comments too, you know, right in the video, or when the stream is over, you can leave comments down below. I don't mention it as often, but hit that like button too. I want to see if we can get the likes up on this video. I know I don't mention it as much as I should. I leave that to the mods. The mods are usually good with that sort of thing. But let's get to more of your super chats here, because I know you guys have been dropping a whole bunch of messages, and I want to make sure I do get to everybody. What did you think of Full Gear tonight? Dried Chicken says, RIP Sammy Guevara. Yeah, poor Sammy. He's had a rough year. For a lot of reasons, Sammy Guevara has had a rough year. KM Truth. Do you think that the Matt-Sammy match was better than the AJ Styles-Undertaker Boneyard match from this year's WrestleMania? No, I don't. I enjoyed the Boneyard match more. It was a bigger deal. It being WrestleMania, obviously, it just felt like a bigger deal, but I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that more. Oz and Glorious, tell me I'm not the only WCW kid who still pops every time Y2J does the Come On Baby pin. No, you're not the only one. You are definitely not the only one. Dry Chicken, I like the fact that referee Aubrey Edwards was doing the Jericho versus MJF match. She does not play around. She is Jericho's go-to referee. Jericho's mentioned that before. He requests her, so I think they just kind of put the two of them together. Turtlehead, is Kingston Bray Wyatt with better promos? I don't know if is that meant as an insult or a compliment. I don't know. I don't know that I would say that. I feel like you're insulting the man. Dried Chicken, a little disappointed there. Was no puddle of blood in the ring during Moxley against Kingston. Yeah, I actually did think that it would be a little more violent than it was in terms of the blood. But, you know, I'm not going to complain about look, the fact that these guys didn't spill 16 pints of blood in the ring, it's fine. It's fine. We got the fake blood with Sammy Guevara in the deletion match. Now, I did mention at the beginning of the stream that I was going to win, and I announced this the other night, but I'll remind people again now. Obviously, well, two things. Number one, in a few hours here, I'm going to be waking up and recording episode 677. That's the full podcast, goes up every Sunday on the platforms you see there on the bottom of your screen. Going to be covering a whole bunch of things, talk a little bit of New Japan, because there were some big things that happened last night on the New Japan show. Talk more AEW, Raw, SmackDown, big history segment, taking your questions as well in the mailbag. So that's tomorrow. On Thursday, there it is. This Thursday, November 12th, probably going to be 8 p.m. Eastern, but I'll let you guys know. It'll be 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. live right here on YouTube. It is the return of Sound Off Inbox, where I'm going to be taking your questions, a lot of email questions, but also super chats like that one. That just popped up right there. So it's all about your questions. It is a 13-year anniversary celebration, since this week is the 13-year anniversary of the podcast. So I might break out a little bit of the bubbly for the occasion. So I hope you'll join me. That's this Thursday, so we'll be live on YouTube Wednesday night for the Dynamite stream, and then again the next day for the Sound Off Inbox. Looking forward to that. I haven't done one of these in a long time. And hopefully this will go well, and we'll do more of these. I won't wait months and months before I do another one of them. So get those email questions in. I'm going to try to get to as many of them as I can. And we've got, I think, a couple of super chats left. If you want to get them in, this is probably where I'm going to end it here, because it's almost 1:30 in the morning. So we'll save calls for Wednesday night. But the cheeseburger. Taz introduces the newest member of Team Taz, Minoru Suzuki. I'm calling it right now. Well, Suzuki comes out with the black towel over his head. Although Taz might consider that to be gimmick infringement. Oz and Glorious, I hope you're getting paid for all of the the Brigham Young University ads that play every 5 minutes on the Sound Off. Well, that's local. That's locally based. So I don't have any control over that. They try to have it where, you know, whatever the local businesses, universities, whatever it is. So you'll have to move. If you move, you'll get different ads, right? So if you move to a different state, if you move to a different country, you might get different ads. But just know that it supports the show. It's all for a good cause. You're supporting the show when you listen to those ads. So I hope you'll take a couple of minutes to at least do that. But thank you, Oz. I appreciate it. All right, I think we're all caught up. I think we are all caught up on Super Chat. So listen, I hope you guys enjoyed the review. I tried to, on that deletion match, I tried to cover most of the key stuff. It's almost impossible to take notes on everything that happens in a match like that. But I enjoyed the show tonight. This was an excellent show from top to bottom. Again, we'll be back live on YouTube Wednesday night. And again on Thursday, we still got Super Chats coming in. Well, I guess you guys want me to stick around. I'll stick around a couple more minutes. Let's see. Dried chicken. Fireworks match on the 4th of July. Sammy against Matt in 2021. I think we've seen enough of Sammy and Matt. Jkin 62. Should Darby Allin try a slasher outfit for a pay-per-view? Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, he can change up the makeup and change up the outfit. Some of the shows. And Q-Ball or LQ-Ball. I think Mox beats your boy Omega. My boy. He's not my boy. My boy. Chad Gable. You want to call Chad Gable my boy? I try to stick up for Chad Gable. You could call Chad Gable my boy. Kenny Omega's not my boy. I just think that he should be the one to take the title from Moxley. And if Moxley beats Omega, then who beats Moxley? Because I don't think you're going to have Hangman beating Moxley. Isn't the better story Hangman eventually getting that win that he did not get tonight over Kenny Omega? Seems like the better story to me. All right, he says it's pronounced Iqbal. Thank you. I saw IQ, and I wasn't sure. So thank you, Iqbal. I hope that answers your question. I'm sorry for butchering your name. All right, guys, look, it's 1:30 in the morning. I'm going to let you guys go. I hope you enjoyed your AEW coverage tonight. I hope you enjoyed the show as much as I did. Please be well. Stay safe. Thank you for all the super chats. Again, that helps the channel immensely. I can't begin to tell you. That's why I mention them. I try to have a whole bunch of different ones that pop up on screen. And everybody who contributes, the least I could do is read them out loud, shout them out. So you guys are awesome. Thank you for all the support. Have a great night. I'll see you in a few hours for episode 677. Big show coming up tomorrow or later today. I'll see you then. Take care, guys.